momentum is hit, and we wanna make it clear. We ain't scared, this is the vision we want. We want, we want, we want, we want, we want, we want.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today, reclaiming Father's Day. We talk about a more feminist Father's Day and the importance of radical parenting. Our guests for the program are author and professor Tomas Moniz, editor of Rad Dad and founder of the Rad Dad Zine. Also, we are joined by Craig Elliott, a professor at Samuel Merritt University, also assistant vice president there, frequent contributor to Rad Dad. We'll also be joined by Ariel Gore, author, activist, and founder of Hip Mama Magazine. We'll round out the program with an update from Kai Newkirk, founder and organizer of 99 Rise, about their 300-plus mile run for democracy. Please stay tuned to the Project Censored Show.
Political ties, habitualized, alibi skies, another guy's democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks on the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, total capacity citizens, and the times for the master thief, divine conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. Fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love.
You are listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. That's the music of Junkyard Empire. We want, well, what we want is a revolution in free speech, and we're going to have it today. For the next hour, we are joined by Tomas Moniz. He is the founder, editor, and writer for the award-winning zine, book, and now magazine, Rad Dad. He just finished novella Bellies and Buffaloes, which is a tender, chaotic road trip about friendship, family, and flaming hot Cheetos.
Yes, indeed.
He has helped raise three children and has been making zines since the late 90s. He teaches basic skills classes in creative writing at Berkeley City College, and his website is raddadmagazine.com. We're also joined in studio by Craig Elliott. PhD is assistant professor and assistant vice president at Samuel Merritt University. His writings and research explore deconstructing socially limiting gender roles, fathers and feminism, white privilege, and institutional change. He has contributed chapters on feminism, fathering, and co-authored articles on the transformative experience of medical missions and institutional barriers to social change. Frequent contributor to Rad Dad, as part of the editorial collective, father of two boys, lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be joined at the bottom of the program by Ariel Gore, get an update from Kai Newkirk at the end of the program. We may be joined by a couple of other dads, and of course, Peter Phillips and I are here as your co-hosts, and we are also a couple of dads. And today's theme is Reclaiming Father's Day. So, Tomas, let's talk about this. You and Chris Crass, who is part of the Rad Dad Collective, also your books, his book as well, is out on PM Press. You recently published an article on Truth Out, and that's called Feminist Father's Day 2014, hashtag Feminist Father's Day. And it says, just briefly introduce this for folks, if you're interested, you can see the Truth Out. You can also find it linked at Project Censored's Facebook page. In the wake of the Santa Barbara mass shooting and the misogynistic and racist manifesto that the killer left behind, women all over the world launched a Twitter-based rebellion that put misogyny and sexism front and center. Far too many men have responded, quote, "But not all men act that way," end quote, using the hashtag "not all men." At best, that such a defense is even needed proves that there is a very real, unavoidable problem. At worst, it sounds as though they're saying, don't blame me. Well, Rad Dad, Tomas Moniz, let's talk a little bit about that. Let's start there, and obviously this is what impelled you to write this piece, but it's also part of the broader path you've been on as a parent and as an author and a radical activist.
Right, and I think I'm glad you brought that up. This is something that has been percolating in, you know, the pages of Rad Dad for a long period of time, as well as many other magazines, websites, and stuff like that. In fact, in our very first magazine issue, we published this piece – about reclaiming Father's Day back then, last year. And it's a wonderful, beautiful piece. In fact, it was the one that I wanted to end the first magazine on because it leads into kind of where we are today. And then, of course, you know, events that happen in the public, like the shooting in Santa Barbara, is just one of those things that just reminds us again and again and again to have these conversations, to situate our own selves in the conversations we want to have with our children and our families.
Let's talk a little bit more about what's in the article, just briefly, and then we can go off on that and certainly bring Craig into the conversation. You begin here then by saying Rad Dad Magazine, and this, of course, that's also Rad Dad Collective. Mm-hmm. Rad Dad Magazine believes patriarchal violence in society is epidemic and takes place in a vast culture of misogyny, male entitlement, and male privilege. Against the reactionary cry, not all men, we say all men need to actively challenge misogyny and cultivate feminism in their lives, families, communities, and society. And, of course, here we are again on the Project Censored show every year for the last few here. We've been hanging out for Father's Day.
I appreciate it.
We appreciate it as well. And this really is an underreported issue. It's it's not the kind of fathering and parenting, and it's not the kind of discussion that the patriarchal corporate media really wants to have.
Well, and also, and I should say too that this essay, although Craig and I, or excuse me, Chris and I put a lot of it together, was collectively written by a number of people: Jeremy Adam Smith, Craig here as well. A lot of also just kind of random people sending in their feedback and their ideas about it. And so that was a beautiful thing for me. Like, I don't want to take responsibility for this piece. This is a collective piece that I think a lot of us have been thinking about and trying to get out there. Robert's here. And so one of the things I was really, really excited about is just the simple way we can take individual responsibility about trying to situate ourselves in this conversation, particularly with our children. So this list is awesome. You know, it's really kind of a fun, playful one. Like, my goal is to, like, have Adam Sandler never make a fatherhood movie again.
Too late.
Right?
Here we are. Every time. Every time we're here, he's here.
So that's in made the list, but also these really powerful, amazing, you know, things that we can do every day. And that's what we want us to do this Father's Day. It's like, you know, instead of getting a tie or going out to brunch, although those are things are fun, you know, what can I actively do? How can I engage in this practice?
Right. And I think just to add.
This is Craig.
This is Craig. Just to add, it's about trying to shift from our individual small time efforts to make a difference into how do we create a momentum and create some sustainable social change.
Yeah.
Now, Craig Elliott, you're a professor at Salem New York College, which is a health care facility.
Correct.
You offer BAs, MAs, PhDs. And so you're fully into this. And you really recognize, you know, kind of the tradition. So let's take a look at what's the meaning of Father's Day in the traditional sense. I mean, is that sort of like a Hallmark card holiday created to sell stuff so that it would increase retail sales for dad's barbecues in June? And how does that tend to reinforce patriarchy?
Right. It's a great question. I think it does feel like it was an add-on or a second thought after, you know, Mother's Day was started and for very important reasons. But it's an interesting, larger question that, you know, the reason we need to have Mother's Day in part is because of our patriarchy. And so then as we were going out and trying to find ways to honor women who were parents, who, you know, were the full-time caregivers for many, many years, dads felt left out. And so this came upon as an add-on. And so I think the conventional wisdom for that is to say, let's, you know, let's give ties or let's give barbecue equipment or things that quote-unquote dads do. And, you know, again, as Tomas said, those are nice things. I love being loved and appreciated by my family and by my kids and my wife. And I want it to be something else. I want my role to be more significant than you can fix things with your drill or you can go barbecue dinner for us. And I want us to also shift from us having to take on the gender-based roles of we're the breadwinners, we got to go do that. We want to be able to offer alternatives that allow for people to take on roles in families that aren't prescribed because of the gender they have.
This certainly permeates the media completely. I was noticing in our paper yesterday a big ad from a local supermarket promoting Father's Day, and all they had on that was whiskeys and scotches and T-bone steaks. I mean, that perpetuates this masculinity that's a very incorrect in terms of what men are capable of being.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about what agendas do you really see happening here?
So I think it's part of us creating a movement and connecting ourselves to the community. One of the things that we found out in just in conversations with this and working on Red Dad magazine is that there's a lot of us, but we're few and far between.
Right.
We're spread out. And so I think our first efforts are to connect each other as a community so that we can build a sense of belonging and a sense of place for us as parents. I think once we get that, then I think it's then beginning to shift and shift the narrative. Mm-hmm. What is being a father like? What is being a parent like in this new day and age? And, mm-hmm. and how do we see ourselves? And even in some of the tips we give at the end of the Truth Out piece, you know, it's about how to have conversations with your kids. It's little things, little things, like how to have conversations with your kids. It's also showing up. Addressing or countering the narrative of patriarchy mm-hmm. each day in each way. And I think for us in the dominant group of masculinity, it takes a more a stronger effort for us to be able to demonstrate that.
Right. But yeah, it's also talking about shifting the narrative. The whole not all men diversion is really a red herring.
Right.
And it's reactionary. Which you say here also, you're alluding to the idea that, well, where's this defensive? This is a defensive reaction,
yeah.
really, right? And so, what about our culture is putting men on the defensive?
Everything, I think. No, I'm joking. I don't know. I think it's like we have a history. It's really, well, I can only speak from my experience, and it's scary and difficult to have these conversations with your children, you know, especially when it comes to violence, when it comes to their own autonomy and safety in our communities. Like, I want them to do what they want to do, and I want to talk to them about also the reality of, you know, the kind of violence that's perpetuated just in the media, out in the world that they're walking through. Like, I think those are really, really intense, and yet also they make me feel more vulnerable than anything as a parent.
And I think you hit on it too. It's a defensive posture. And I think there are a lot of good dads out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's also where it comes from is, you know, hey, not us. We're the good ones. But I think it also talks about that it's an individual response to a systemic problem.
Right.
And we need to have our work be addressing the system of patriarchy.
Exactly. Those are sociologically structural problems.
Exactly.
That it's difficult to say we want to blame individual men. But men collectively, we have a responsibility to address this structurally in terms of society.
Right.
And that pressure on men to be the breadwinner, to be the dominant person, decision maker in the family, is a long cultural socialization process that is worldwide in many ways. And what we're talking about here is trying to radically change that from the bottom up.
Right.
In a grassroots capacity, mm-hmm. Whereby men can participate openly in these kinds of discussions and that sort of process.
Right.
So, how does a man raised in terms of strong masculinity address this in his life when he has children?
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way?
Tomas, or we're going to bring a couple other people in here in a moment, but let's go with Tomas and Craig, and then we'll introduce our other couple of guests that got here.
My experience is simply just having those conversations. Like, you've got to address them. I love some of the things that people brought up here about, like, celebrating who your children are, and yet talking about the differences that are out there, involving history, dealing with the everyday aspects of being either gender out in the world. Right.
Yeah, and I think it's about recognizing the individual differences in our children, but celebrating their wider range of emotions than what we've been allowed to have as men growing up. I think it's also challenging those gender norms that are coming in the commercials and the TV and the movie. Disney's especially difficult with some of the gender conversations.
On so many levels. Yeah. We could have a whole show about that, but we'll skip that for now.
Exactly.
Well, we're speaking with Tomas Moniz. We're speaking to Craig Elliott. We're talking about the Rad Dad Collective. We're talking about reclaiming Father's Day and a feminist Father's Day for 2014. We are also joined now by Robert Trujillo in the next studio, and we're also joined by your co-editor of the Rad Dad book on PM Press, Tomas, Jeremy Adam Smith. Robert and Jeremy, you're with us.
Hello. Hi, how's it going?
Hey, how are you? So you've been listening over there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Robert, why don't you chime in here about some of the things that we're talking about?
I think for me, on like an individual level, when I became a dad first, one of the things that really first blew me away was going to Toys R Us. And I don't know if you've been to Toys R Us and you look for like cooking utensils or cooking tools. And I remember asking the attendant, where do I find that? I want to get a cooking set for my son. And she's like, oh, yeah, it's over here. And then it's in the girls section. But then you see like a sea of pink and only the cooking and cleaning toys are there. There's none of that over there in the boys section. And so I was like, okay, well, I want to try to make a conscious effort to show my son that boys can cook and clean too. And that was a very small thing, but on a much wider level in terms of the conversation, I think that there's a big talk back. There's a lot of people who are willing to step up and say something that, to the effect of, this is not necessarily how it needs to be. We can change the way fathers are seen. We can change the way the gender roles are supposed to be seen.
Right.
Yeah, Jeremy Adam Smith.
Well, I always think that the first step towards any sort of larger social transformation is introspection. And I think this is especially true for men who feel like, you know, the way things have been arranged between men and women is just fundamentally unfair. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the first steps you have to take, you know, when I first met Tom, I had just started a blog about fatherhood. And that was just me writing about the experience of taking care of my son and trying to notice. I was not that conscious of it at the time, but I was trying to notice the contradictions that I was personally experiencing, and also seeing the contradictions outside of me, and allowing the experience of taking care of my son to transform me, to change me, and also to change my politics. You know, it really gave me a lot of insights that I would not have otherwise had. And, you know, and I think for men generally, I mean, you can get to that by writing. That was my particular path. You can also get to it, I think, through meditation, mindfulness meditation, because a big part of it is just becoming aware of what's going on inside your head, what's going on in your body. When you become angry, you know, that's when the rubber can really meet the road in a relationship, and that's when you really see patriarchy show itself. You know, when you just allow that anger to take over, and the way to stop that is to be conscious of it, to tell yourself, I'm angry right now, I'm going to do something I'm going to regret, and I need to calm that down. Mm-hmm.
I would like to remind everyone, you're listening to the Project Censored show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. And right now, we have a studio full of dads. So there's a lot of voices going on, but a lot of male voices talking about patriarchy. And we're talking today about reclaiming Father's Day and a feminist Father's Day. There's a new piece, Rad Dad Collective has out on Truth Out. You can find it there, Feminist Father's Day 2014. You can also find it by going to the Facebook page for Project Censored. It is linked there. I urge people to check it out for this reason. We're not going to get to the whole article and all that's on it, but there is a list of 50 ways that you can reclaim Father's Day, and these are things you can do. So this isn't just, you know, for people maybe that are. I know we've already said a couple times here, we've talked about radical parenting and rad dad and these kind of things. But the big point of this is for all of the men in our society, dads or not. These are ways to interact not only with your kids but other kids, you know, people that are uncles and so on. I mean, this is a different way of walking through the world. Wouldn't you say that, Tomas?
Yeah, it is. And I actually really, really appreciated the diverse amounts of suggestions that we got from, like it says in the article, from the playful, you know, just like
Let's look at a couple.
Yeah.
Why don't you just name some? Let's tease people a little.
Let's see. Anyone chime in if they have one? Well, I started off with the idea of believe in other men's ability to parent, talk to other men about fathering. I think that's a really a thing when I know, like Jeremy was talking about, my personal experience when I had young kids was to, I never really had conversations with other parents, other men, I should say, about fathering. And that weren't, you know, limited to the things like proud and like, you know, how are you going to, are you, you know, happy for this type of thing? Like, no, I wanted to talk about the difficulties, the way in which it like ripped me open and made me more vulnerable. And those were difficult conversations to begin. But there's so many other ones that anyone else
doing half the labor at home in terms of raising the kids. I mean, that's certainly so many men, you know, they say, well, I'm the breadwinner. I'm out 40 hours a week or more. And but the responsibility with children is both.
Right.
And really recognizing that and finding ways to compromise and make that possible seems to be a big part of this.
Mm-hmm. And I think with that, recognizing
this
the second...
Craig.
This is Craig again.
Yeah.
The second and third shift that comes with raising families is, you know, being a breadwinner and working, that's an important piece, but it's not the only piece.
Mm-hmm. Robert Trujillo, let's bring you back into the discussion.
I think... I would touch on what Tomas also said. One of the coolest things for me when I was really young, I mean, I still am a young dad, but was, again, having conversations with other fathers. And at first I was a little bit shy because, you know, you come up to some brothers and they're like, they're very willing to engage you and talk about things, you know, day-to-day things,
right,
or larger systemic issues.
Sports.
And, yeah, I suck at talking about sports. but when you talk to some people, they're completely like, you know, it almost gives you the cold shoulder, and they don't want to talk about it at all. And I think just having, like, a person-to-person conversation between another father and, like, kind of using that tenement of, like, trusting someone else's ability and their expertise, like,
right,
whether you know it or not, you are an expert, and mm-hmm, you do have knowledge to bestow.
Now, Jeremy, you want to chime in here?
Sure. You know, what I was just thinking about was how, you know, we developed a hashtag, Feminist Father's Day, and we've been seeing a lot of reaction to that on Twitter, and a lot of hatred. And the main thrust of the criticism, if I can call it that, mm-hmm, is that we shouldn't be so introspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they really have they're like, why are you talking about it? Why don't you just do it? Why don't you just live? And, you know, and I want to say to them, that's not enough. I mean, you know, when you have guys walking around with guns who think that they can shoot women because they don't, you know, because those women don't want to sleep with them, that's not enough.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's an emergency. And we as men have to react to that. And, you know, when I heard this, I thought of my grandfather, who, by the standards of his time, was a great father. You know, he worked every day. He worked 6 days a week. He was driving a crane in a quarry. This was a very working class guy. And he was doing what his family needed him to do. But he didn't want to talk about it. And I think that the course of his life, and I think this is true for a lot of men of his generation, the generation that came after the baby boomers, and also, you know, subsequent generations, X and Y, you know, it's things have changed so much out from under us. And the women who are in our lives, our wives and our mothers and our sisters and, you know, the women we work with on the job, they have changed so much. And it is incumbent upon us to respond to that and to respond to it with thoughtfulness and integrity. And to not do that, to me, is... I don't understand that.
Right.
I guess I'm just going to surrender here and stop, like, making a speech, because I don't get it. I don't know how you can live like that.
It seems really important to me that men have an ability to talk to each other and that we can actually organize around that. I have actually been in a men's group since 1985, mm-hmm, and the one I'm currently in, I've been together with these men for 20 years. So we've gone through deaths and cancers and family breakups and a variety of different things that we can share, we can talk about. We can talk about politics, but we also can talk about real intimate kinds, right, of things that are going on. And one of the problems that men face today, I mean, is these deep, serious consequences in their lives where they're just stressed out. And
right,
since 1982, there have been 70 mass killings.
Wow.
69 of those were perpetrated by men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's, and a third of those were in the workplace.
Right.
So, you know, the pressure of being the breadwinner and trying to maintain, and then the threats that can happen in our economy with a surplus labor force can be very devastating,
right,
to men.
Right. Right.
Well, one of the things that says,
Tomas?
Yeah, says that one of the suggestions is tell your kids when patriarchy hurts you. And I think that's a nice, mm-hmm, way to kind of bring it back to, like, this is painful for us as well.
Yeah. Craig. And this is Craig. Just to go with that, I think it's allowing for a wider range of expression for what it means to be a man or masculinity. And I think, you know, Paul Cavell talks about this,
right,
about the box and about how,
yeah,
how stressful and how dehumanizing trying to force all of ourselves into this very narrow way of what it means to be a man.
Right.
And I think you've touched upon that about how do we have it be where this can be a freeing experience for us and that there are many ways to show up as a man and what that means in terms of our families and our communities.
And on the list here, number 15, you talk to your kids about how women used to be treated when talking about history. I, of course, as a historian, I'm always interested in talking about history, but this is an important aspect of history, right? Talking about the patriarchal roots mm-hmm. of history in our society. That's right. Something that's very important that we ought look at. And then, of course, there's also, what about this term mansplaining? I guess we kind of started the segment with that. Jeremy, do you want to talk a little bit about mansplaining?
I'm tempted to say no.
Okay, all right, let's skip that. How about you, Robert?
I'm not even familiar with the term.
Oh,
but...
right on. Yeah. Jeremy, you want to go back? You change your mind?
Well, you know, I think that... It's so funny that this has like become a thing that people talk about in a way, because it's such a micro interaction, really. I mean, this is something that happens at parties. And it's the sort of thing where I think of a lot of men, if it's woman-splained back to them, you know, if that mirror is held up and they see it, it suddenly makes you conscious of something maybe you weren't conscious of before. And if you're willing to listen, then you can grow from that experience. I want to make a small point here, which is about self-forgiveness and self-compassion. I think it's very important to forgive yourself for these little transgressions or try to forgive yourself for some of the big transgressions and to have a little bit of compassion for the fact that you are struggling. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these issues that we're talking about are very private, very intimate, very interpersonal, and we make mistakes, and that is okay. If you can admit to yourself that you're fallible, that you make mistakes, if you're willing to forgive yourself for that and to move on, that makes the situation better. Mm-hmm. Makes it better for you, makes it better for women, makes it better for children.
Kids, yeah.
And, you know, and you model that. If you model that behavior, you know, only good things will come of that. And I actually think that's the root of mansplaining, that insecurity, that rigidity. Mm-hmm. If you can let that go, it's better. It's just better.
And this is Craig, and I'd like to touch upon that. I think Jeremy made a great point. I think it's, you know, we're trying to swim upstream. With a lot of these narratives about what it means to be a man. And it's hard. We're going to trip and we're going to fumble. So I think compassion is a great part. And I also take some of Maya Angelou's words to that as well. As soon as you know better, you do better. Mm-hmm. And so for me, this is about a practice of every day trying to do better than I did yesterday. I make a whole lot of mistakes with my kids. And I have to go to them, ask, you know, apologize and ask for their forgiveness in that and tell them, you know, where I think I wish that I would have done better. And I make a commitment to be able to do better tomorrow.
Right.
And I think that's a pretty powerful experience to go through with the kids.
Yeah.
Tomas?
No, that was beautiful, that exchange. Yeah, right. Thank you for that.
So this is, for those of you joining us, this is the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today we're talking about, we're talking about reclaiming Father's Day. We're talking about a feminist Father's Day. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be bringing in Ariel Gore. So we're going to include a hip mama in the conversation, a big part of the conversation. But we have about a minute left in this segment. I just wanted very quickly to go around and have each of you tell our listeners where they can go get more information on the web, some of the materials, Rad Dad Magazine, etc. So, Tomas, we'll start with you.
Yeah, well, raddadmagazine.com is our new magazine. Our new issue comes out this weekend, so, you know, look for it and ask for it locally.
Formerly just an old school zine, now a magazine.
Magazine, and it's pretty and very nice, and like the idea is that we're trying to have the conversation go beyond just the people, you know, the smaller community that I was a part of, and kind of incorporate the people from everywhere. So we're trying to get, you know, all 50 states to carry it, subscribers from all 50 states.
And Craig Elliott?
So I will go with the hashtag activism, go for hashtag Feminist Father's Day as a way to begin to bring the conversation out into the Twitterverse and social media as well, as about the things that we can do to make a difference in this shift patriarchy.
Mm-hmm. Robert Trujillo?
I would just like to back up the going to look up Rad Dad Magazine, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or any other social media, but also for those dads out there that are not familiar with it, to contribute, even if you're not really sure what to say or how to say it, but to contribute. You know, it's really important just to, if your voice is not there, to say something.
And Jeremy Adam Smith, you're a co-editor of the Rad Dad book with Tomas, and you have a blog.
Yeah, that's right. Though I'm not going to plug it. I'm going to do something a little unusual. I work for the UC Berkeley Greater Good Science Center, which is fundamentally concerned with the emotions and the behaviors that tie us together, like empathy and compassion. And I always think that the elephant in the room of that research is gender. And it's scientists, psychologists, researchers seldom really look at it through that lens. But it's something real. It's a really important piece, and it's a fact that when you look at this research, that women as a group, we're not talking about individuals, as a group, you know, do tend to be more pro-social in this sense. More, they're better at compassion, mm-hmm. better at forgiveness, better at gratitude. These are skills. And these are skills that men need to learn how to practice. And if they do, it will have good effects elsewhere, especially in the balance of power in our society. Men withhold those things in order to have power over other people. And that needs to stop.
Less street fights after that.
We're going to continue our discussion about reclaiming Father's Day after this brief musical break by Junkyard Empire. And we'll be joined by Ariel Gore. Please stay with us.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians. Cause they owned by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces, slavery.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. That's the music of Junkyard Empire, We Want. And what we want today is to reclaim Father's Day. And in order to do that, we need to bring in a powerful feminist voice as well from Ariel Gore. Ariel Gore is a journalist, memoirist, novelist, nonfiction author, and teacher. She is the founding editor, publisher of Hip Mama and Hip Mama Magazine, an alternative press award-winning publication covering the culture and politics of motherhood. Ariel Gore, you join us by phone because you're on a book tour.
I am. Hi.
Thanks so much for joining us again on the Project Censored Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell people tell people a little bit about Hip Mama and why it's so important to have Hip Mama talking about Father's Day.
Hip Mama is a parenting magazine that I started 20 years ago at Mills College in Oakland as a single mom, as a college mom. And, you know, right from the beginning, there were always dad's voices, married mom voices, older mom voices. So it wasn't meant to be an exclusive magazine, although Mama has some exclusionary connotations, I understand. We just relaunched the magazine this year in some collaborations with Tomas and Rad Dad. So we've both been working hard on the new issues of Rad Dad and Hip Mama this year. You know, I started the magazine just as a place to talk critically about parenting, to look at these issues that you guys have been talking about, to have a parenting media that wasn't just about rounding up an audience of people to sell minivans to or to reinforce the, you know, sexist children and adult gifts that are marketed so aggressively to us once we have kids.
Ariel Gore, also, Hip Mama was recently in the news, and I know we certainly are paying attention to that at Project Censored because of a purportedly controversial cover. The Great Controversial Infraction was a wonderful photograph of a little Spider-Man boy breastfeeding and Hip Mama wearing the Spidey mask, and that was a little too much in our culture, apparently. We can have breasts everywhere except where they're for.
Yeah. Right? I know. Apparently the first time anyone's seen breasts on a magazine cover.
Yeah, wow, shocking. Alert the media. Somebody did alert the media, apparently.
Yes, you can see our lovely cover at hipmamazine.com, and also the Feminist Father's Day piece is up at hipmamazine.com also. Yeah, that was pretty funny. I mean, it's horrific that this is still an issue, and it'd be, you know, another big deal about the photo that was circulated about the woman who was breastfeeding during graduation, this public breastfeeding thing. Apparently, you know, you live in a different subculture if you're me and you don't know that anyone cares anymore. You thought that, you know, it was only your grandma in like 91 and you had to talk with her and it was over. But yes, apparently public breastfeeding in many circles is still not okay. It's still considered quite radical. And the magazine cover terrified many of our distributors who are not huge corporate distributors. They are independent press distributors.
That's what was odd. That was strange to me.
Right? You know, it's not like you're going to find a mama in mainstream grocery stores where you can't get organic food. So it was, it very much took me by surprise. It certainly took my web guy by surprise as the website kept crashing. He was like, what is happening? You know, we had all this traffic. So yeah, if I had known that all I had to do was put a breast on the cover of the mama for print to survive, I would have done it years ago. But yeah, so we got a lot of attention. We got banned in a lot of places, but we also got a lot, you know, really worldwide attention for the absurdity of the argument. And so it ended up getting that cover in particular and Hit Mama out there to a broader audience than the previous issue.
Maybe if you know, if you had the Hit Mama along one of the corporate stores there, grocery stores, it's competing with formula or something.
Right. I don't. Yeah, I think it might be worse than that.
Yeah, okay.
You have Hit Mama. I actually thought had pretty radical content. And I didn't think anything of the cover when we put it together. My daughter, Maya, is actually our art director, and she collected the cover, and it's a self-portrait by the photographer. And we thought it was a beautiful cover, but we didn't think it was going to be controversial. We thought maybe the back column by Gloria Malone called I Heart Teen Motherhood would be controversial. No, that's okay with everyone now.
On the list, we have one ways that we can, like, you know, celebrate Feminist Father's Day is to support breastfeeding mothers.
Yeah, we're still joined in studio by Tomas Moniz, founder, editor, and writer of Rad Dad. We're also still joined by Craig Elliott, professor at Samuel Merritt University and contributor to Rad Dad. We're also speaking with Ariel Gore of Hip Mama Magazine. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. Peter?
Hi, Ariel. This is Peter Phillips. I wanted to ask about globalization and Hip Mama and Rad Dad, these are, you know, culturally here in the U.S., but this is a global phenomenon. And, you know, what we're really dealing with, of course, is intersections of race, class, and gender worldwide, and the abuse of women as workers, because they're considered, particularly in factories, where they're considered to be more submissive and able to be managed. How do you see this in terms of a worldwide effort, grassroots effort for radical social change?
Well, I think that, I mean, the nuclear family in particular, and the marketed version of the American nuclear family, has been so used to support the systems that you're talking about in terms of the idea that women are intrinsically submissive. You know, being a single mom, there haven't been male parents in my kids' immediate lives as they were growing up. And a lot of people, from relatives to people I don't even know, are always quite concerned about, you know, where are they going to get the discipline? Where are they going to get the structure? Who's going to control these children? Which, you know, looked at in the context of what you've been talking about this hour, it puts this bizarre, intense pressure on fathers to at first control their small, you know, their macrocosm families, and then, you know, into the larger world to have this very paternal in the worst sense of the word, patriarchal attitude towards their workers and whatnot. And that really does begin with the family. And that is a huge reason why single moms are considered ill-equipped. It's like you're going to be too compassionate to toughen those kids up and to abuse them properly to get them ready for the workforce. It does in so many ways begin with our attitudes about what families are supposed to look like and what power is supposed to look like. And that brand of power does begin in the families. And that's why Hit Mama and Rad Dad, I think, really, you know, even when we're covering the most intimate subject matters, can't help but do it in a political way. Because as soon as you start to shift those dynamics, as soon as you start to look at those dynamics, then the implications are global. They're not just about what happens in our individual apartments.
And this is
absolutely.
Craig.
Ariel, Craig, talk about rad politics.
So I think just to add to what Ariel was talking about, I think in your point about globalization, I think a lot of our cultures are built on violence as a means of controlling and about regulating. And I think that's where we all blend together in terms of our needs and how we can work from this perspective and this change from a more global perspective about eliminating violence as a tool in our lives and about how do we then move to a more compassionate, loving community, a global community, as well as our micro communities.
We have a lot of guests today, a lot of rad dads and one hip mama. And we want to bring Jeremy Adam Smith back in. You want to comment on this radical politics issue?
This is huge, what we're talking about. And, you know, and we do have to I'll make the argument that I made in my book, The Daddy Shift, that, you know, what we saw a huge economic change happen. Lifetime male employment went away. Women went to school and they went to work and they fought for legal structures and for economic structures that would allow them to do that. And there's a lot of things happening that are bad, that require a lot of creativity on the part of the people who are suffering from it. And that creativity can give rise to a lot of good things. But I think it's easy, especially as a parent, to get very caught up in constantly adapting, constantly trying to figure out how to survive, and not looking at that bigger picture. And, you know, and I guess I'm addressing it specifically from just the narrow point of view of how you cultivate some sort of larger transformational vision in the face of the fact that you can't make the rent at the end of the month. And I think the answer to that is community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ariel Gore, we want to have last words from you. You're joining us by phone. What would you like to conclude with today?
Well, you were talking about mansplaining earlier, and I would like to talk about kidsplaining for just a sec, because I have noticed that my kid is having to explain to a lot of people, other children, and his teachers, that not everyone has a mother and a father living at home with them. And I think that in 2014, that burden should be off of my six-year-old. So if everybody can tell their friends that this thing has happened and that we're not living on sitcoms and everybody's households are quite different, and here are some examples of what they might look like, then there wouldn't have to be so much kidsplaining going on about the fact that not everyone lives in a nuclear family, and that's okay. And it's okay if you live in one, too, as exotic as we may like to think of them.
Ariel Gore, thanks so much for joining us today and taking some time out of your busy touring schedule, your magazine work.
Thank you.
Parenting, everything. I have to say, a longtime fan, I wouldn't know about you if it weren't for my wife. That's where I first learned about Hip Mama, and actually that's when I start considering being a rad parent when I had kids. That's actually the first time it dawned on me. So I was certainly late to the game. And
right on. That's great.
My wife and sister-in-law both from Mills, too. So shout out to the Mills people. Ariel Gore, thanks so much for joining us today.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today we're reclaiming Father's Day, talking about a more feminist Father's Day. We also have been referring to an article that's on Truthout. You can find it on our Facebook page at Project Censored as well. It's on reclaiming Father's Day and a more feminist Father's Day. We only have about 5 minutes left in this segment, so we want to do a little wrap-up here. Each of our guests, Tomas Moniz, Craig Elliott, Jeremy Adam Smith, Robert Trujillo, what's one other point that you really wanted to make? We could have multiple shows. Tomas, I say this all the time, but you should hold me to it. We should do this more than once a year.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to it now.
Hold me to it, and hold me to contributing something. You keep asking that, too. But this is one thing I'm contributing.
Okay.
So, Tomas.
All right, so I actually really want to say number 6 on the list for me is crucial, and I think I've been more and more writing about this, which is listen to when a child says stop. And then stop. And like, I think they talk about teaching consent and teaching, you know, they have the ability to control what happens to their own bodies, I think is so crucial. And I know for me, parenting my, you know, when I was a young father with my young son, like I just roughhouse and like, you know, you push that line a little bit. But in reality, I think like when they say stop, stop. And then when they want to play again, they will ask. And then we could play. And I think that would create a really powerful understanding of consent.
And a lot of broader lessons, obviously,
yes,
stemming from that,
yes,
into adulthood. Craig Elliott.
So I'd like to add, I think for me, I go with the feminist way of the personal is political, and so my act of being a parent is very political. And so I want us to consider our roles and the work we do in the world as our political offerings. And I think there's more that we can certainly do about it. It's about individual work. It's about social work. It's about community work. It's about building community and about standing up for what we see as wrong and being active in our work to make a better world.
Hear, hear, Craig. Couldn't agree more with that. Robert Trujillo.
I just wanted to say that I think so much of our lives is being taught to be a robot and being pushed through this, you know, very large machinery with all these systems in place of what you're supposed to do, where you're supposed to stand, and mm-hmm. how you're supposed to stand. And I think that Rad Dad and Hip Mama both represent a way for you to stand or actually get out of line and say, you know what, I'm not going to go with this. I'm not going to follow that line into the machinery that's going to mangle my brain and my kid's brain and kind of keep this cycle of madness going on for years.
Yeah. Right on, Robert. And last words from Jeremy Adam Smith.
Well, I just want to say thank you to anybody who's ever called me out for being a jerk.
I'm waiting for someone to say you're welcome.
Oh, there's like 100 you're welcomes happening throughout the Bay Area right now.
I thought you were talking to me. Go ahead. You're done? That's it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's just very key to open yourself up to that criticism and that feedback and to have that conversation. And I also, you know, for a lot of political people, maybe this is bringing coals to Newcastle, but I'm often surprised at how few couples, you know, whether they're together or apart, I'm talking about co-parents here, sit down and have a conversation about how we're going to raise a child according to our values. You know, I think you have a lot of those conversations before you have a kid. And then you have the kid, and you get a lot of new data from that experience. But then you don't go back and ask the questions again. And I think it's pretty important, you know, periodically you sort of have to go back because your kid is changing, and exactly. You're changing, and your relationship is changing. And, you know, and I think you have to sort of consciously make the effort to go back and ask those basic questions.
That's a very, very good point, Jeremy Adam Smith. I know that as a co-parent, I have those conversations and dialogues, and they're incredibly important to have. Tomas Moniz, Craig Elliott, Robert Trujillo, and Jeremy Adam Smith, thank you so much for joining us today in Reclaiming Father's Day, the Rad Dad Collective. You can learn more at raddadmagazine.com. Also, we were joined by Ariel Gore, Hip Mama. You can go to Hip Mama Magazine, hipmamamagazine.com, or just look up Hip Mama for Ariel Gore. Tomas, you can stay on with us here if you want for the last segment of the show with Craig. But we're going to shift gears now, and we're going to continue on our theme of Rad Dad and radical politics. More specifically, we're going to be joined now by Kai Newkirk, who is a progressive organizer and co-founder of 99 Rise, building a nonviolent movement to end corruption, leading the California March for Democracy, marchfordemocracy.org. On May 17th, dozens of activists led by the grassroots organization 99 Rise departed Los Angeles to embark on a 480-mile March for Democracy across the state of California to raise awareness and mobilize the public around the issue of big money in politics. They plan to complete the march at the state capitol building in Sacramento June 22nd, where they will demand that the state legislature publicly acknowledge what they are calling the crisis of corruption. Of course, this specifically revolves around the Citizens United FEC and recent McCutcheon FEC rulings. And Kai, you're joining us from the road.
That's right. Good to be with you. Thank you so much for having me on.
So you're marching for democracy right now.
That's right. I'm walking. We're just getting into the town of Turlock here in the Central Valley, finishing up our walk for today. We did about 15 and a half miles, and we're just finishing up now. We've come over 350 miles of our journey so far here on day 28.
So what's going on the march specifically, and how are things going in the places where you're running into people? Are they obviously asking you what you're doing?
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of folks, you know, talk to us if we go by their houses or they pull over in their cars. You know, when we get into town, we have conversations. And we've really been inspired by and, frankly, humbled by the support that we've gotten in a lot of the communities from folks who have stepped up to house us, to feed us, to welcome us, to rally with us, to go visit their assembly members or senators. And it really sustained us and encouraged us to see that support from folks who believe in what we're doing and are moved by the sacrifice that we're making and are stepping up in amazing ways to help us.
You're joined also by Lauren Schlesig, we understood. Was that correct?
That's right. That's right. Brother Schlesig, the professor, came and he marched with us actually on his birthday, which was another humbling honor, you know, to have him walking with us. I had joined him myself in New Hampshire on the New Hampshire Rebellion that he led in New Hampshire in January, walked for 5 days in the cold and snow with him there. And that was one of the inspirations that we took in deciding to do this march through the heat of the summer in California. In addition to the march that Granny D, Doris Haddock, did when she was 88, walked from Los Angeles to D.C. with the campaign finance reform sign on her chest. And, of course, in California, Cesar Chavez and the farm workers and the marches that they made, especially the 1966 Pedregui Nacion from Delano to Sacramento. And we followed a lot of that route and have actually been supported by a lot of the veterans from those marches with Cesar Chavez and the farm workers and organizers with the United Farm Workers. And it's been that's been one of the really powerful experiences that has connected us to this lineage of nonviolent struggle and, you know, connected us with a lot of people that are organizing around other issues, whether it's immigrant rights or organizing unions or dealing with fracking in their communities. You know, folks who see that their fights are deeply connected to the question of corruption and the crisis of the big money control of our government. And people who are coming to see what has moved a lot of us who are on the march, which is that unless we deal with this issue, which Schlesig calls the first issue, we're not going to be able to make change and win change and make real progress on these other fights.
This is, Kai, a very important issue, I believe. And I really appreciate what you're doing. And because on Father's Day, we're really talking about empowerment for working people, men and women, rad dads and hip mamas worldwide, and being able to asking our government to repress money as a vote is vitally important to that. And we really thank you for that effort.
Thank you. You know, you're absolutely right. Working families, folks in our country, moms, dads, everybody, we all deserve a voice. This should be our government, should be of, by, and for the people. It should be run, and we should be ruled according to the one person, one vote political equality. That's not the reality now. We're not living in a democracy. It's a plutocracy where money rules. It's $1, one vote. Some of us have a few and some have a billion. And they're using that money, that wealthiest 1%, to control, determine our elections, and to get a government that serves their interests and not ours. And we see that on issue after issue. And we can't just sit by and accept this anymore. And I think for your listeners, they largely know this, like most folks in our country do. Polls show that 65 up to 96% is huge supermajority, almost unanimity of recognition that we need to reduce the corruption and influence the money in politics. But not enough people are doing something about it. People are resigned to it. They don't have a sense of hope. They don't feel empowered about it. And so that's why we're marching, to lead by example and show that the urgency of this is so profound, because we don't have a future as a country if we don't deal with this problem, that we need to make deeper sacrifices. We need to challenge ourselves to do whatever it takes. But that's why we're marching these hundreds of miles through the heat, over the mountains, through the desert, through the Central Valley, to show people that we have to do something about it and to model the commitment, the courage, the sacrifice that it's going to take to do it, and to call on our leaders here in California, the biggest state in the union, one of the biggest economies in the world, to step up and take leadership. And that's why we want them to acknowledge that the system is corrupt and to take immediate action to end it by passing 3 bills that are pending in the legislature and would advance the constitutional amendment to deal with this problem once and for all and start to rein it in our state. And if we can do that in California, force our leaders to respond to this, I think we can give people hope around the country that we can win change.
Kai Newkirk, people can learn more at marchfordemocracy.org. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. So please go there if you agree with us, if you believe in this cause, which I'm certain just about everybody listening does. We need you to get off the sidelines, to go there, to sign up, to join us on the march, and especially to join us when we get to Sacramento on Sunday, June 22nd. Where we want to come in with as many people as possible and where we're going to occupy the Capitol nonviolently until our demands are met. So we need people to stand with us.
Kai Newkirk of 99 Rise. Again, you can learn more about this march at marchfordemocracy.org. Corporations are not people. Money is not free speech. Kai Newkirk, thank you for joining us, and thank you for the march that you're on for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
That's about it for the Project Censored show today on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with my co-host, Peter Phillips. You can learn more about Project Censored online at projectcensored.org. I'd like to give extra special thanks to our producer, Anthony Fest, and also thanks to Erica Bridgman. Did an amazing job at the board today, juggling around so many rad dads and a hip mom on the phone. So cheers to Erica Bridgman. I'd like to thank Tomas Moniz and Craig Elliott. Like to thank Robert Trujillo and also Jeremy Adam Smith, our full house of rad dads. Thanks everybody for joining us today. Again, please check us out on Facebook. You can learn more about the Rad Dad article from Truthout. Stay tuned next. You will be hearing Terra Verde, and you're listening to KPFA 94.1 FM, KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, online at kpfa.org. Special thanks to Chris Cox and the folks at Junkyard Empire for their wonderful music today. We want you to tune in next week and keep it tuned to Free Speech Radio.
Criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, skies, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks of all the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, fill the capacity, citizens, and the times for the master thief. Combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you probably owe the menu.